morning, brothers and sisters. When I was a very young man in the truth, which was a long time ago, another young man who was a bit younger than I and who I looked upon as rather a bit of a kid was baptized, and his uncle wrote to him and told him in this letter of encouragement to make the book of Proverbs his guide for life. And being very wise and very old, about 20 at the time, I thought I knew a lot better than that, and wondered why anybody should bother to recommend the book of Proverbs to somebody being baptized. I thought there were so many other books that I would have recommended rather than this. But over the years I've come to appreciate the book of Proverbs very much more, to a great extent through the ministrations of Brother Islip Collier, not only in his writings on the subject, but I heard him speak on it many times, and he gave me an insight to the book which has helped me ever since, and I want to, if possible, God willing, try to impart to you as well the same enthusiasm for the book and perhaps some insight to its value to us as a guide for living. You see, it's not just a collection of smart sayings. That's what I used to think. It was just a collection of aphorisms, of smart sayings, of things that sounded good. Proverbs, in the sense that, you know, a stitch in time saves nine. But of course, it's nothing like that at all, really. It's the word of God, and it's wise sayings from a man who was given special wisdom by the Lord. He didn't live up to it himself, and there's a lesson in that for all of us, too. I can stand here and say all sorts of wise things to you that may be very right and very wise, but whether I put them into practice in my own life is between me and my God. And it's very much easier to say things that are wise, to know things that are wise, than it is to put them into practice. And Solomon wasn't very good at the latter, though he was specially endowed with wisdom to be able to tell us what the word of God was in relation to the subjects of which he treats in the book of Proverbs. Another thing is, you'll find that many of the Proverbs are reflected in the New Testament teachings, and if you read attentively, you'll be surprised how often the Lord Jesus Christ himself either quotes directly from, as in some cases, or refers obliquely to, as in others, these wise sayings of the book of Proverbs. Now, I think there's a way in which we can approach the book that will be helpful to us, and I want to take an exercise in this morning. You'll find that almost all the Proverbs can be looked at from different points of view, at different stages of interpretation. You'll find, first of all, that they generally state something that is self-evidently true. You don't need a lot of thought to realize that on the literal plain, this is a wise saying. It's perfectly true. That's the literal. And then you can lift it up another stage and see that it's also true in the metaphorical sense. That the way of looking at that in which is not only literally true, but has a metaphorical significance as well, and we can interpret the proverb into the affairs of our everyday living. And then you can go one stage farther, which I think is the stage we need to take and don't often take, and see that it's not only true literally and metaphorically, but spiritually too, that hidden in these wise sayings, there are even deeper depths of meaning than perhaps we at first suspected. I'm going to take an example, just as an illustration of this, from the 14th chapter of Proverbs and the first verse, where we read, "Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands." Now, this is literally true, isn't it? It's only common sense that the wise woman will look after a house. She'll keep it in good repair. She won't pull it to pieces. We used to hear horrific stories in Britain, though I don't know whether they were ever true, about people who lived in council houses when they were first brought in, and they used to, so we were told, pull the banisters down and burn for firewood and keep coal in the bath. Well, anybody can see how ridiculous that is. You're pulling your place down around your ears. And a wise woman keeps a place in good repair. She doesn't allow it to dilapidate in this way. So on the literal plane, we can see how true this proverb is. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. But you can also see, surely, that in the metaphorical sense this is true as well. And the wise man is thinking here not only of the physical house, but of the house as a home, and the influence of a wise woman in the house, that she will be constructive, that she will be helpful, she will be upbuilding, a good mother and a good wife. And bad temper and a vindictive tongue and things of that kind are destroying the home. Now, you don't need much imagination to be able to see how this is true as well. Not, you needn't necessarily pull the banisters down and use for firewood to be destroying your house about your ears. If your influence is such that everybody goes about in a bad temper and the children are all neglected and you're just vindictive and vile-tempered, this is pulling the house down around your ears. Whereas the wise woman's influence is going to be upbuilding and edifying, and will hold the family together. We get an example of this in the last chapter of Proverbs, where the writer talks about the good wife who can find a virtuous woman, a capable housewife. Some of the translations say, the sense being, a good wife. Who can find such a wife as this? For a price, when you've found her, is above rubies, he says. I'm sure many of the brethren in this room this morning will say, yes, I've found such an one. A woman whose influence is good. A wife who is upbuilding and helpful. Whose family are well cared for. And who looks after things in the home. This is lifting the proverb, you see, to a metaphorical sense. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life, we read. Verse 26. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. You know, I do love that phrase, and you needn't only think of the women. It's wonderful to find a person, man or woman, in whose tongue is the law of kindness. You know, we don't often think about kindness. It's not one of the words that is largely in our vocabulary. We use the word love a lot, but we don't use the word kindness so much. I love the story of the little boy who was supposed to be saying his prayers, and he said, please God, make all the bad people good and all the good people nice. Good people aren't always nice. And round the home, and in the home and round the family table, the law of kindness isn't always in our tongues, brethren and sisters. But it was in hers, because she was a wise woman whose influence was upbuilding in the home. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favour is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Such a woman is worth her weight in gold, as we should say. And that's just what he says. Her price is above rubies. So we've seen how this proverb of chapter 14:1 has been lifted now to another plane. It's not only the physical, literal sense, but in the metaphorical sense too. The wise woman builds her house with kindness and love and thoughtfulness for others. I have a cutting here from a newspaper about the world-famous pianist Harriet Cohen. I don't know the lady, in fact, but reading about her, I almost wish I did. It says, one could not trap her beauty in a book or a picture or a photograph, because a great part of its power to please lay in her grace. And this was not merely a physical matter. I never knew her to betray a confidence, repeat a spiteful story, or fail to repay a kindness by a greater kindness. Now that's a wise woman. Can you get the sense of this? The wise woman who is upbuilding and helpful. Wouldn't it be nice if we could say of ourselves, we never ever betrayed a confidence, repeated a spiteful story, or failed to repay a kindness with a greater kindness. It was her grace, he says, that made her beautiful. That's what the wise man is pointing us to in the metaphorical sense. But of course it's also true in the spiritual sense. It doesn't need a lot of imagination to lift the house now to the house of God, the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. And we think of how many times in the New Testament epistles particularly, the apostles exhort us to be edifying. Now that's all it means, building up, edifying, the edifice, the house of God. Build it up, he says, all the time. Don't be destructive. And the principle of this proverb still holds good. If we think now of the wise woman being the church, the bride of Christ, ourselves as we claim to be and hope we are, then this proverb is telling us that we will behave ourselves wisely in the house of God, and we won't be destructive in our influence. We will be always trying to build up and be helpful to the membership. Building yourselves up on your most holy faith, as the Apostle Jude says, be constructive. Be builders. Notice he says, building yourselves up, not in, though we often use it as in. He doesn't mean keep on increasing your knowledge, though that may be helpful and good. But what he is saying is, build yourselves up on your most holy faith. Your most holy faith is the foundation of the building. Now you have got to build up this house so that it may be fit for a habitation of God eventually through the Spirit. And what this proverb is saying, lifted to this highest sense, is that the wise woman builds up the house and doesn't tear it down with her hands, which indeed sometimes we almost seem intent on doing. But wisdom doesn't do that. Wisdom is constructive and helpful and upbuilding and edifying. So there's a lesson in there for all of us today. But there's still yet an extension of this Proverbs chapter 14 verse 1. And it's brought out particularly by the Revised Standard Version, which interprets the words as wisdom. Not the wise woman, but wisdom builds a house, but folly tears it down. And the Companion Bible tells us that indeed this is a noun and not an adjective. It's not saying a wise woman. The woman isn't really part of the original. It's wisdom. Wisdom builds a house, and folly tears it down. And perhaps this is a reference back to those earlier chapters, such as the one we've read this morning, and those which we're reading in this group, which goes on about up to chapter 9, where we have this apparent conflict between the wise woman on the one hand and the foolish woman on the other. Chapter 9 particularly, if you'd like to go back with me to over the page to chapter 9, here we see wisdom and folly personified as two women. And they seem to be doing the same thing, and they seem to be offering the same things, and they are all both calling to the same kind of people. But there's a tremendous difference in what they're able to perform. Wisdom hath builded her house. Chapter 14:1, the wise woman, wisdom, buildeth her house. She hath hewn out her seven pillars, she's killed her beast, she's mingled her wine, she's furnished her table, She sent for the maidens, she crieth upon the highest places of the city, whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Forsake the foolish, and live, and go in the way of understanding. So here's a picture now of wisdom depicted as a wise woman who has built her house and furnished her table and cries to the sons of men saying, come into my house and I will treat you well and bless you. But contrarywise, of course, folly does the same thing. Verse 4. Verse 13. A foolish woman. Now here's the contrast between the wise woman and the foolish woman. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knoweth nothing. For she sitteth at the door of her house, on a seat in the high places of the city, to call passengers who go right on their ways. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. And as for him that wanteth understanding, she saith to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. So you see, both wisdom and folly are personified as women, the wise woman and the foolish woman, the good woman and the evil woman. Both calling to the sons of men, both inviting them into their house. But the difference is that wisdom brings blessing and health and happiness to those who enter into her portals, whereas the foolish woman, while she promises so much, bread eaten in secret is pleasant, she says, but in the end her guests are in the depths of hell. They don't realize they're going to their death and to destruction. The difference, you see, between one and the other lies in their performance. They may offer, wisdom offers and folly offers, but only wisdom can perform. She brings happiness and life to men, whereas folly, which masquerades as wisdom, brings only disillusion, despair, and death. One is therefore, in New Testament terminology, the wisdom which is from above, first pure and then peaceable, easy to be entreated, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the other is the wisdom which is from beneath, which is earthy, sensual, devilish. And these two women crop up frequently in these early chapters of the book of Proverbs. Chapter 5, for example, and the third verse. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. There's a word of warning here, you see, for all of us, and perhaps especially for our young people. Folly, the ways of the world, the wicked woman personified, offers you so much that is enticing and glamorous and seems so desirable, but you'll get nothing out of it, really, in the end. It'll turn to gravel stones in your mouth, the Proverbs say. Only devastation and death and disillusion can come from going in her path. And yet she sounds so nice. She sounds so attractive. Knox's translation, I'm going to redo because it gets this insinuousness. In the words of this foolish woman, honey sweet words the temptress may use, all her talk be soothing as oil, but oh, the dregs of that cup are bitter, There's ever so many brethren and sisters, you know, over the years, have found this to be true in their own experience. We've prayed this morning for some of those who may have lost their way in the world and lost their faith in the truth. And they've been led astray very often by the honey-sweet words of the temptress that sounded so enticing. But oh, the dregs of that cup are bitter. Chapter 2, which we read yesterday, wasn't it? Verse 16. These sayings of mine, the wise man says to his son, these sayings of mine are to deliver thee from the strange woman, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words, which forsaketh the guide of her youth, and forgetteth the covenant of her God. For her house inclineth unto death, and her path unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life. Again, you see, the foolish woman pulling down that which God would build. The words of the temptress leading men astray. And they don't realize when they go into her house that the dead are there and that it's a path of destruction. Chapter 7. A vivid portrayal in words of what is called the oldest profession in the world. Note her brash behavior in verse 11. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she called him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee, diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved work, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. See how tempting it all is. How pleasant she makes it all sound. The good man is not at home. He has gone a long journey. He hath taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. The Lord is away. The master of the house isn't there. You don't need a lot of imagination to be able to translate that into New Testament terms and our own experience. The master is away, and the world is enticing. With her much fair speech she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips she forced him. What a paradox is here. She forced him. It was she leading him on. It was she who was bringing him to destruction. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. Hearken unto me now therefore, O ye my children, and attend to the words of my mouth. Let not thine heart decline to her ways. Go not astray in her paths, for she hath cast down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death. God is saying that to us. You remember how in Hebrews the apostle says all this isn't just Solomon giving counsel to his son David or one of his other sons. It is the Father speaking to you as unto sons. We've got to interpret it this way. God is talking to us through Solomon. And he's saying to us all, young people, middle age, and the old brethren and sisters too, nobody's immune, nobody's safe. Don't listen to her. It may sound all right, it may sound very promising, it may sound very attractive, but her house is the way to hell, going down to the chambers of death, and many strong men have been slain by her. There have been examples of brethren who have been strong in the truth, good speakers, well known, famous, one might almost say. You'd have said, he's safe, he's a good strong brother. But the world has got them in the end. Demas. Demas sendeth greetings, Paul writes in his letters. Demas sendeth greetings to you in another epistle. Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. Many strong men have been slain by her. She promises so much, but she gives so little in return. The wise woman, on the other hand, contrasted with the foolish woman, may not be so superficially attractive. The truth often isn't so superficially attractive to men. There are other things in the world that seem, on the face of it, to offer so much more, a more restricted life in the truth. A way of life which has to be lived, an understanding which has to be acquired. Not so superficially attractive. There is no flattery, there is no guile in wisdom. But what she promises, she performs, and those who go into her house don't go in the way to hell and death, but to righteousness and life. Chapter 8, verse 7. This is wisdom speaking now, the wise woman. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. She fulfills her promises, and she'll never let you down. Verse 35, for whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favour of the Lord, but he that sinneth against me wrongeth his own soul. All they that hate me love death. What a strange paradox. If they choose to go that away, into the house of the harlot, the world, the prostitute, the foolish woman, the paths of silliness, they go in the way of death, and they've chosen death. They love death by going in there. But those who are wise and want life and health and true happiness, they will come into my house, she says. And they'll find that though I may not be so superficially attractive or beautiful to the senses, yet with me they will obtain that which is permanent and abiding satisfaction. So you see, we've gone full circle, and we've come back to the proverb with which we started. Wisdom buildeth a house constructively, faithfully, but folly can only pull it down, because she is destructive and devilish. And here are the two ways, then, of which Jesus spoke. The broad way and the narrow way. The way of God and the way of the world set before us. There is a wisdom of this world which has many superficially attractive ideas and pursuits. which promised to satisfy either the natural mind or the natural appetites. They're like siren voices calling to the Greek sailors in ancient times, as these mariners passed by the islands and they saw these fair maidens singing their songs, and they were lured to them, until they came to grief on the rocks and were shipwrecked and drowned. These are the siren voices of folly calling to the sons of men and bringing them to destruction. But true wisdom lies in listening to the right voices. There are, the apostle says in the Corinthians, in a different context of course, he said there are, it may be, so many kinds of voices in the world, and none of them is without signification. Try it on your radio sometime, that's what you have done. You're trying to find the station, you're turning the knob, and it squeaks and groans and you hear all sorts of different languages coming across. They're all saying something, but what they're saying you've no idea. All these kinds of voices in the world. And it's true spiritually. There are so many kinds of voices in the world. So many voices we can listen to. Siren voices that will turn us away from God. Voices that undermine faith, deride our calling, attract our friendship, divert our attention. Voices that flatter, voices that seduce, voices that cajole. And yet there's only one voice can save us. Only one voice we must listen to on peril of our eternal life. I heard the voice of Jesus say, "Come unto me and rest. Lay down, thou weary one, lay down thy head upon my breast. I came to Jesus as I was, weary and worn and sad. I found in him a resting place, and he has made me glad."